Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game, and the Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. The Predators are in action tonight on the road, taking on the Philadelphia Flyers. Puck drop at 6 o'clock. Willie Donick joins us from Philadelphia. Willie, how are we doing?
Hey, hey. I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Beautiful day here in Philly. Big game tonight. Two good
Big
teams.
Big game tonight, indeed. And joining us now to break it all down is Elliot Friedman of the 32 Thoughts podcast and of Sportsnet. Elliot, always appreciate our weekly sit-downs with you. The Predators, with the exception of a not-so-great game against the Vancouver Canucks earlier this week, the Preds have been red-hot, 13-4-0 in their last 17. But one thing that we were talking about yesterday before Willie hit the road to Philadelphia, three of those last four losses have been blowouts. You know, 5-2 against Vancouver, 4-0 in Toronto a couple weeks ago. What is that? Is that something that you can explain, or is it just sometimes this time of year, weird things like that can happen?
Well, I think there's always details that slip, Carolyn, but what it says to me, it's a reminder that even though your results are good and you guys play hard, if you're not on top of things, it gets ugly, and it gets ugly quick. Like, it just says to me, you guys are still going through your growth. You're plugging new guys in. You're plugging young guys in. You're trying to see what they can handle. You know, we didn't make the playoffs last year. So, like, it just comes down to, if you're not on top of your game and you're not on your toes, you could still get your lunch handed to you. And coaches, I don't think coaches like a lot of those games, but they don't mind.
Oh, we may have lost Elliot there.
This is, oh, sorry.
There we go. No,
hey, guys,
okay.
My Bluetooth kicked in. Hey, guys, if you're not good, this is what can happen to us.
And speaking of that, I think that was maybe exposed on Tuesday night against Vancouver when, you know, when the defense in front of UC Saros was letting as many shots get through, and UC Saros was an absolute Superman. We saw what the result could be, but Ellie, could we be approaching the territory with UC Saros and his level of play, how valuable he's been to the Predators? Are we approaching the territory of pay the man whatever he wants when his contract is up?
Well, I, as someone who likes to see people cash in, I'm all for that. There's no question about that. Look, like, there were teams that called and asked you guys about him. And, you know, I think last year, kind of where you guys were, I think you guys at least thought about it a little bit, but didn't obviously see anything come up that made you do it. This year, I think you've been asked about it, and the answer's been no. And I get it. Like, one of the things that when you've got a growing team, you have to give them belief that where you're going is, you're going to get there and you're going to get rewarded on the way there. And when you've got young players, if you have terrible goaltending, it can really shatter your group. And that's why I think Nashville was wise to go down the road it did. You know, the other thing too, Carolyn, you know, he's going to be, I think, 29 in April. There's some real evidence that among skaters, your productivity drops as you get to 30. But goalies tend to have a longer window. I know that, like, there are teams that would look at a 29-year-old player and think big contract and say, okay, we're going to take our chance with this, but we know it could end really badly. I think there's a lot more confidence that if you're going to give a big contract at that age, a goalie is a better bet. And, you know, I'll be honest, Carolyn, if you guys don't pay him, somebody else is going to.
Well, Elliot, I already said, if you get rid of Saros, I'm not watching Predators hockey anymore.
I'm boycotting. No, I'm just kidding.
Is there any more news with Tyson Barrie? Because it seemed like everything after, you know, everything sort of got out 2 or 3 weeks ago, it seems like now everything has quieted down. But it doesn't mean that, you know, behind the scenes they're still not trying to work on a potential trade with Tyson Barrie. So from your knowledge, has things completely slowed down, or is just something that, hey, if an offer comes across that we feel is right, then we'll take it?
That's kind of the way the news cycle goes, Derek. When the story first breaks, it's hot and everybody's talking about it. And, you know, it didn't help that not long after that, the Predators came in to the center of the NHL media universe in Toronto, and it was obviously a topic. But I think everybody knew that the way this was going to go was that Barry was going to, because of the salary he makes, and I don't think the Predators are too crazy about keeping salary because they've got a little bit of dead money on their books. I think people knew it was going to take time. So, and also don't forget we're in the movement freeze right now until the 27th. So nothing could happen anyway. But I just think people were aware that this was going to take some time to play out.
Now, Elliot, the last 16 games that the Predators have had, we know what their record is. It's been more wins than losses, I think, they have in all of that, four losses in that span. But those four losses, I mean, you know, at least two of them were lopsided. They lost to the Wild 6-1. They end up losing to the Canucks the other night 5-2. Is that more an indictment of just a long season? Or you know how a fan base can get when you're winning is great, and then all of a sudden you have this huge loss, and it's, oh, everything's going wrong, this team jumped. So is it just a byproduct of it just being a long season?
I think it is, but I think, Derek, like I was saying with Carolyn before, I think when you're a team that's growing into what it can be, it's just a reminder that if you're not at your best, you're going to get your butts kicked. And, I think that that's a key thing. I think you guys have been better than I thought this year. I think you guys have probably been better than a lot of people thought, and probably even deep down, although they might not admit it, better than maybe the own organization thought. But, you know, I think there's still a recognition. Like, the team you guys are playing tonight, Philadelphia, that's another team. Like, nothing was expected of them this year, and they're having a really great year. And people don't know what to make of it. They're kind of like, all right, is this for real? Or are we still a long way away? And I think the answer is probably closer to B than it is A, and you guys are the same. But that doesn't mean you can't enjoy the ride. It also means that you guys are developing good habits or better habits. It also means that you've got a great goaltender, one of the best in the league. I think you should enjoy it while it's there, but also recognize that it can really end quickly if you're not on top of things.
Elliot Friedman is with us as we talk NHL hockey. Sorry, Elliot. Let's talk a little bit more about the Flyers, because I really thought that they were as advertised. And the question I know on everybody's mind around the league is, how are they doing this and can they sustain it? John Tortorella, I think, got a little short, as he can be, when he got asked about playoffs, the P word, around. He says, I'm not going there. I'm not even going to go there. But I think their numbers and the way they play really suggest that it's not a fluke what they're doing.
Okay, did you ask them that today, Willie, or was it somebody else?
Really, no. I was nowhere near, because they didn't come to the rink this morning. They have their own practice rink, and they skated there.
Oh,
so I'm glad I wasn't.
Oh, they did have their own practice facility. Okay, because I was going to say, like, if you had any guts at all, I hope you would have followed it up. Like, just say, come on, John, I want an answer or something like that.
I would have been more likely to be ducking under a table.
What would have happened? Yeah, they'd be peeling your guts off the floor someplace.
Yeah. Right.
The thing is, like, first of all, they've gotten good goaltending too. I mean, if you don't have good goaltending in this league, you don't have anything really. But secondly, like, they play really hard, and that's one thing. Like, the thing about Tortorella is, guys know, like the one thing that he is very consistent about is, like, number one, he knows players are going to make mistakes. He doesn't generally, like, he'll only freak out about mistakes if they happen over and over and over again. Or, like, one of the things he talks about, he's talked about a lot over his career coaching, and players who played for him will tell you this, is, like, know your role. Are you a superstar? Then I expect you to play like a superstar. Are you more of a grinder or a fourth-line player? There's nothing wrong with that. Expect you to play like a grinder or a fourth-line player. He doesn't want you doing what you're not supposed to do. But as long he understands mistakes happen, but he wants effort. Like, as long as you play hard for him, he will find the spot for you. And all those guys understand that. And I think the other thing, too, that they have is they have an assistant coach there named Brad Shaw, who I think is one of the great teachers in the NHL. And some of those defensemen, and even like, whether they were kids or veterans, have come a long way under him. And it's just a reminder that you're never too old to learn. And the other thing, too, is that the best players, I don't care how long they've been around, they want to be taught. And those guys are responding well to the teaching.
Elliot, I know you've been talking a lot about the issue of some recent suspensions and some tough hits that have resulted in injuries and suspensions. And I thought about that a lot because Nashville is number one in the NHL in hits per 60. But they've so far, knock on wood, they've avoided anything like that. They've been doing it the right way, so to speak. But I know you've been theorizing how the league tries to handle it when you have sort of a surge in that category of hits that really have people going, ooh, that's a little bit over the line.
Well, you know what? I was actually watching your game the other night, and you had one I thought was bad, but then when I saw the replay, it wasn't, and that was Lauzon on Connor Garland.
Yeah, that's where I was going to follow up on that after.
Like when I first saw it, I was holy smokes, another one, and then you saw the replay, and you realize, okay, that would look bad, but it wasn't bad. And then I completely understand why Lauzon wanted no part of Dakota Joshua, because it's not like he's afraid or anything like that. We all know he's a willing combatant, but he's like, you know what, I didn't do anything here, so just forget it. And like, I think there's a couple of issues going on right now. We've had a lot of hits from behind, and I think that one of the things that I think that some players have talked about is, like, if you know you could really plaster someone, it's on you to do it as cleanly as possible. Like, the one that got everybody upset was Florida Columbus, Nick Cousins on Erik Gudbranson, and people were upset because Cousins didn't have to hit him the way they hit him. And that had people upset. But the other thing, and I didn't even think about this, Willie, until a couple of the players mentioned it to me, is that you don't always want the referee. There's, like, sometimes the teams have to deal with it. Like, a player has to deal with it. You have to police yourself. And one player told me there was an incident where, like, the players didn't like a hit against one of their teammates, and the referee said, look, that's not a penalty. And it's not, like, there was some conversation on the ice, like, it's not a penalty, it's not a suspension. Like, you know, and I think the message the player told me was, that was inferred to them, was you have to police it themselves. And if you take a look at the two suspensions that come out of it, they've both coming from players policing it themselves. Now, one was David Perron, who made a terrible mistake. He got the wrong guy, and he cross-checked someone in the head, and you have to deal with the consequences when you do something like that. But the other one was Gudbranson, who fought the guy who hit him. And like I wrote today, the league doesn't want Grand Theft Auto 6 out there. They kind of, there's a limit. But I thought it was very interesting that some players were really upset that the guys who tried to self-police it were the only people suspended. And I thought that was a very fair point, because if you're going to say to players, you guys have to deal with it, you can't necessarily have them all getting suspended. So hopefully now that I wrote it, maybe somebody will pay attention to it. But I have a theory that I can't change anything important. I can only change stupid stuff. So we'll see if it goes anywhere.
And the other part that I thought it was interesting, when John Tortorella last week was talking about sort of the issues, he feels like there are some players that have grown up not coaching or being taught how to be hit. Some they're not expecting to be hit, and that is an element to all of this. So what were your thoughts when he said that? Because I think a lot of people were kind of gasping a little bit, like he was going a little old school, but it's an interesting thought.
Well, I completely agree with him. Like, I do. Like, so I was born in 1970. I stopped playing hockey in the early 80s, and for us, that was financial. We had, like, a really tough period in our family, and we basically had to cut any cost that, you know, we didn't have to have. So I had to stop playing hockey. And to be honest, I wasn't as good as I should have been. I was kind of a soft kid. But one of the reasons I really had trouble was, all of a sudden we went from no hitting to hitting, and I didn't know what to do out there. And I was kind of a smallish kid, and I got destroyed. Like, there were times I still can remember feeling some of the hits I took. And I remember thinking that at the time, and I do think for a point we got better at it. Now, look, like, hockey's changed a lot. We understand the long-term dangers that some of these injuries can cause. Like, fighting, although it's on a spike this year, it's really nowhere even close to what it used to be. And the one-dimensional fighter is gone. But I absolutely do believe at the younger levels, Willie, there's not much hitting anymore. And I think players come up here, and especially in the playoffs, this can be a really mean game. I think there are a lot of young players who are not prepared for it. And, you know, I think that goes double for Europeans like Slavkovsky, the number one pick in Montreal last year. Like, he got pummeled, and there was a kid in Toronto in their minor league team. He's from Finland. He came over to their development camp in the summer, and he got destroyed in their development camp. And it was just because they're not used to it on the smaller ice. And I think Tortorella's right. Like, the one thing that worries me about all this is that these are not great highlights to see. Like, you don't want these to be your highlights on CNN. Number two, you worry about parents saying, I don't want my kid playing that if that's the risk. But I do think Tortorella's right in general, and I felt it as a kid. There is a skill to learning how to hit and be hit. And I think that I would have enjoyed it a lot more if I had been taught that. I think it did get taught later, but now I think it's out. And I think Tortorella's right, because when you get here, you're going to get hit, and you better know how to deal with it.
Last one for me. Barry Trotz does a really good interview on our station weekly on our afternoon show with Jared Stillman. And he was asked, you know, if you're looking at what you need and you're in a position around the trade deadline of having the cap space to actually take on something where a lot of teams don't, you know, what would your thoughts be? And of course, the players, he said the same thing that most people say at this time, the players will decide. And but he seemed like he was open-minded without mortgaging the future of adding the right guy if that guy becomes available. So what do you look at the market as right now as you look into your crystal ball for the coming months, knowing that the Predators probably have more space than a lot of the teams that are really up against it?
Well, I think you can use that to your advantage, right? Like, I think Trotz is smart. And, like, we call that weaponizing your cap space. And and good teams do it, or smart teams do it when you have the option. And I think that he is, I think that he will absolutely do that if the opportunity presents itself. And, you know, like, Anaheim is another team that would probably consider the same thing because they have the space. And I think that's what you should do. I think you should be trying to do anything you can to make your team better. And if you can squeeze an asset out of somebody because someone needs the help or the room, why wouldn't you do it? And I wouldn't expect the Predators and Trotz to act any differently.
Last one from me, Elliot. Elliot Friedman is with us. Tyson Barrie has been the topic of conversation of potentially dealing him. Of course, we know his contract situation, how he was publicly unhappy about being healthy scratch. The Predators have a great problem to have of having a wealth of defensemen. So if there's not a market for Tyson Barrie, what does the market look like potentially for a Dante Fabbro?
I think the thing is that it's probably not as good as it just like, I got to think that every team out there knows that Fabbro is available, Carolyn, and what Nashville's looking for him. I think I'm surprised it's turned out this way. I remember watching Fabbro as a university/junior player and thinking that he was going to be a stud. And I'm just surprised it hasn't taken off as much as I thought. One of the challenges in situations like this is teams don't have a lot of cap room. And so how does Nashville feel about facilitating that? But number two is you probably always ask more than what other teams are wanting to give up, especially with a player who's kind of been in and out of the lineup, right? Okay. Yeah. So unfortunately, I don't think the market is as strong as you would think. And I have to admit, I'm very surprised because I thought Favreau was going to be a heck of a player, and I'm really surprised at the way it turned out.
Elliot Friedman of the 32 Thoughts Podcast and Sportsnet. Elliot, appreciate you as always. Enjoy the rest of your week. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and happy new year to you.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a great – are we on next week or are we off next week?
That might be a TBD.
Exactly.
We'll have our people call your people, Elliot.
I think we're on. Let's go. We're on until we're not. Like, you have to stay in game mode. Elliot, you got to focus.
You got to imagine the side eye you're getting from Derek and Carolyn right now.
That's right.
We stay ready so we don't have to get ready, Elliot.
All right. Well, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and Happy New Year to all the great hockey fans of Nashville and Tennessee. And guys, have a great holiday.
Elliot, same, we appreciate it. Have a good one. All right, Elliot Friedman, he is the very best. We'll react to what Elliot had to say there. Plus, on another podcast that we love, Dmitry Filipovich's PDO cast had some glowing words to say about a Nashville Predator. Not just a player on the ice, but off the ice as well. So we'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie DeMays, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.